The scripture reading this evening is from Proverbs chapter 1, verses 1 through 9. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains around your neck.
I would encourage you to keep your places marked there in Proverbs, because we're going to be doing a study of the book of Proverbs. As we've been going and looking at the various books of the Bible, beginning with an overview of the Bible, looking at certain verses that help us kind of hone in upon what the theme of a particular book is, and then look at a skeletal outline and then make some applications. And so we've come to this part of our study where we're going to be looking at Proverbs. Proverbs is a fascinating book. It contains a goodly amount of information that helps us in understanding how we ought to live rightly and appropriately. This book is primarily a collection of the wise utterances of King Solomon, who received his wisdom directly from the Lord. And if you go over to 1 Kings, the 4th chapter, verses 29 through 34, that points this out. It's the place in which you find referencing of Solomon, the things as it relates to some of the activities of Solomon, some of the building and achievements of Solomon are noted there. He wrote some 3,000 proverbs, or uttered 3,000 proverbs, as is pointed out. And it's also noted that it comes from the wisdom. This wisdom comes from God. And so those verses are very instructive to kind of give us an insight to this individual and his understanding of matters, and how that thus can help us to comprehend why it's important to note what Solomon has set before us. And of course, it's from inspiration of God. While some of the material in Proverbs is arranged in a discourse format, most of the book's structure follows the pattern of providing seemingly random statements that are short, pithy, proverbial sayings. The writings contained in the book cover an array of subjects and topics, which provides practical instructions for how to live a godly life. Now, let me note, for those of you visiting with us, we're thankful for your presence. On the back table, there's a sheet that has this basic information for each of the books we've been covering, for the material we've been looking at. And so you're welcome to pick that up and to have that. And as we go through it, I've been putting out each of the Sunday evenings that we're covering this material, something for you to be able to take, look at, to be able to have for future studies. And this is an overview. We can't cover everything. It's not possible. But it gives us a sense of what the book is all about. When you look then at Proverbs, the memory verse, or the verse that we would highlight, what's the principal thought behind what is being expressed, is the seventh verse of the first chapter. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and fools despise wisdom and instruction. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. That sort of capsulizes then what is being set forth and the idea of wisdom. Here's wisdom, and wisdom that is given to us. That's the theme of the book. And there's a lot of ways to define wisdom. As you start looking at it, and a practical way to kind of give some insights as to wisdom, one definition of wisdom is applied knowledge. You first have to have the information, and then the wisdom to apply it properly. So that's one very good definition that helps us understand what's needful. So before I can be wise, I have to know, have information, be given instruction. Another definition of wisdom that I came across, again, very practical, and it's to see the end from the beginning. And you think about that, and it's kind of, what does that mean, to see the end from the beginning? It means that before you go down a path, before you get to a certain point, you already see the outcome. You already know what's going to take place. And the wisdom to understand, if you start in a certain direction, if there's a certain place in which you're going about doing certain things, and as you're preparing and approaching it, then you look at this and say, you know, if I pursue this, this is going to be the end result. Have you ever known individuals, and I no doubt you encountered this, we tend to certainly see this easier in others than we see in ourselves. Where you see somebody and you say, you know, that person is on the road to ruin. Just the very beginning points of what they're doing, just the things that they're engaged in, just the conduct and behavior that they are displaying in their life shows an inevitableness of the direction that they're headed. Well, that's, you know, the idea is, how do we know that? Well, it's an insight. It's an insight that's based upon understanding of certain matters. And we recognize that you do certain things and there's an inevitable outcome that's going to take place. Well, wisdom is like that. It's applied knowledge. So we need the knowledge first. And it's the understanding, the insight that we have that if you are here and certain things you do in your life are going to lead you down a certain path for good or ill. So with those thoughts in mind, let's look at then the outline of Proverbs. Wisdom imparted to Solomon's son. That's the first nine chapters. And as I said, there's a narrative type of approach, just some information set forth in the first section here. And as you read through it, it's kind of like reading some instructions that are given. It covers a multiplicity of things, as we'll note here. You find that the purpose of the book is described in the first seven verses. Warnings about evil companions. And that's in the first chapter and takes you on through then to the 19th verse. And then you find there the value and benefit of seeking wisdom and following wise counsel. Now this is a larger section that kind of goes through this and kind of lays it out. But as we look at this, it's going to be difficult to cover all of the different things that the book of Proverbs is referring to or describing. In fact, the best way to study Proverbs, if you're going to go through and do a study of Proverbs, like in a Bible class setting, for a quarter or two quarters, is topical. Now, the first nine chapters, you can go through and read it and discuss it. But what you're going to find as we go further into the study is that there are these short, pithy sayings, and the statements are made referencing all different kinds of subject matters. And then you take the topics that are found throughout and you bring them together and discuss them. So the first part, though, is this kind of narrative. Warnings about being enticed to commit adultery and the desirability of having wisdom as a companion in life in the fifth chapter through the ninth chapter, verse 18. And this is really interesting because one of the things you find here is that wisdom is personified. That is, it's given the personality of an individual, and in this case, a woman. There's the woman that is this one that is referred to as the adulteress who is trying to draw you away, trying to get you to engage in wrongful behavior, to draw, and as it's written to the son, or to from the perspective of addressing the son, he's going to give advice and give some instruction and give some helpful insights and say, here's warnings that you need to be aware of. And you start with this idea, these are women you need to avoid, these ones that are trying to ensnare you and trap you and bring you into a behavior and conduct that is reprehensible, that's wrong, that's ungodly. But contrast that with the wisdom, that one that is referred to as that woman that's desirable. Gives these characteristics of this woman and the desirability, calling out to draw you to her. Having her as your companion in life will benefit you and aid you. And so that's what you find addressed in those. Wisdom of Solomon, 10th through the 24th chapters. As I said, these are topical in the sense that you start reading through the 10th chapter and the 11th chapter. There is no one point that's made. It's going to cover a multiplicity of things. But we find that the Proverbs, which contrast the godly with the wicked, and the 10th through the 15th chapters. And again, that's a broad thing, and this is the only way I can do it in a skeletal outline to kind of give us a sense of it. Proverbs encouraging godliness. So the 16th to 22nd chapters, which again are similar to what you had have, but it sort of gives us a sense of some ideas that are being presented in these sections of this part of the book. Proverbs, which addresses various situations encountered in life. Fascinating to see all the different types of circumstances that one has. It looks at the multiplicity of life situations and addresses how we're to conduct ourselves in all of these different ways. The second or third major category is Wisdom of Solomon, copied by King Hezekiah's men. And that's chapters 25 through 29. So it's a collection, and as you look at that part at the start of the 25th chapter, it notes that. It says that this is the statements, the wisdom here, Hezekiah's men, so this is a collection, a compiling of these things. So you look at the Proverbs dealing with various relationships in life, and Proverbs dealing with varying activities in life. So relationships, activities, again, there's not hardly anything that's left out that has to do with practical living and situations, how to conduct ourselves, how to be successful in the right way, and avoid the dangers and pitfalls that are out there to ensnare us. The fourth section is Wisdom of Eger, and that's chapter 30. And then the last one is, the fifth section is the Wisdom of King Lemuel, and that's chapter 31, being a wise leader, first nine verses, and the worthy woman in chapters verses 10 through 31. Now, let me just go ahead and say that I'm not sure who these individuals are. There's different ideas that are presented as to who they might represent. Eger is considered by some to be a compiler himself and some information in drawing these things together. Some have identified him in various ways and capacities. Lemuel has been identified as perhaps a king. Of course, he is referred to as a king, and the king of some nation around about that was influenced by a mother of Jewish descent, and that therefore he's giving these wise sayings of his mother as well as relates to these types of things. But others have taken it and said that this is just another name that is referring to King Solomon, and that Solomon's still under consideration. I'm not sure what the answer or explanation is, but I do know that the information has been compiled and that's brought together. These are proverbial sayings. The bulk of it, far and away, is Solomon's minimally, if not the entirety of it. And the thing is, it's still inspired literature. And one thing to keep in mind that sometimes people call into question or place doubt upon some of these places in Scripture as to whether or not we can have confidence that it's really the mind of God revealed to us. The ones that brought this together and talked about then Hezekiah's men and these bringing these together, these were the Israelites and the Hebrews. These were the individuals who knew who the ones were that were the prophets of God, that had knowledge regarding the teachings and instructions of the Lord. The Hebrew Bible, which is what we refer to as the Old Testament, when they compiled that and put it together, they were the ones that knew who were those ones that were amongst them that spoke by the power of God. They were the ones that they recognized as they were directed and given, as Moses was at the very outset when the Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, when those are set forth, they recognized that these were the truths that God revealed to them. And God brought this to them, and all these prophets and those individuals who were historically laying out these matters, going all the way to Ezra and Ezra and some of the things that Ezra set down by inspiration. So when they compiled Psalms, these were Psalms that were inspired of God, and they knew it, and they're the ones that put it together. When you look at these proverbial statements, these were statements that God revealed to these individuals, that God gave, that tells us what we need to understand and know. And they recognized who it was that revealed this information. So you look at it, and another thing that we can do is you start looking at the instructions and the information, and it harmonizes with the rest of the Bible. King Solomon was a wise man. God gave him his wisdom. We know the story. We know the account. He said many proverbs. People came and listened to him. They marveled at his wisdom and the insights he had, the ability to rule the people correctly. But that came from God. And as we read these instructions, keep in mind that even though it comes from Solomon in the cases of the proverbs, what's more important, it was given to Solomon by the Lord. That's what makes it profitable. That's what makes it beneficial. As we look at this, and that covers that outline material, let me note then some sermon lessons and applications. Now, like I said, you could spend a goodly amount of time just taking certain subject matters that Proverbs deals with. I want to look at it somewhat again in an overview fashion, sort of help us to see these things and discuss what is being honed in upon and is giving us some information that helps us. So the first point is one that probably is pretty obvious, but I think just being obvious doesn't negate how important it is for us to be aware of it. True wisdom is only found in fearing the Lord. Yeah, the wisdom, the idea of the wisdom of the world, people have all these insights, all these ideas, all these concepts. True wisdom only comes from fearing the Lord. That's the only place it's going to be found. And as you go through and read these verses, now the first seven verses we already talked about, here's Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. What's he doing? He's giving instructions to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. You know, there's this information that's being given and provided, and he's drawing it along, and he's saying, look, I'm giving you all this insights. I'm giving you all this understanding, an awareness of what's going on around about you, things that have to do with the relationships of life, interactions that we have that have to do with how we live rightly. So he's going through all this thing, and there in verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. You know, that was that verse that we use to note the theme being wisdom. But here's the fear of the Lord. It's the beginning of knowledge. It's the beginning of everything that we're going to follow and see and do as it relates to what is going to be our life. You talk about godliness in life. Where does that begin? Fear of the Lord. When you drop down to verses 29 and 30, and we're just going to read these verses, highlight this, because it's a recurring point that's made and observable. And that kind of helps us appreciate how important it is. Because they hated knowledge, they did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would have none of my counsel and despise my every rebuke. Here's talking about those that are the opposite. They hate knowledge. They did not choose the fear of the Lord, that reverential respect and regard for Him, being in awe of God and acknowledging Him. You go to the 9th chapter in verse 10, and there we read, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. The 19th chapter in verse 23, and we read, the fear of the Lord leads to life, and he who has it will abide in satisfaction. He will not be visited with evil. And the idea of evil here is not some calamity that may befall an individual or problems or troubles of life. The evil here has to do with wrongful conduct and behavior. The evil that be visited upon them having to do with the situation being outside of the Lord. You turn back to the 14th chapter and verses 26 and 27. In the fear of the Lord, there's strong confidence, and his children will have a place of refuge. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life to turn one away from the snares of death. You know, there's an interesting thing. You read some of these proverbs and the way that they're worded, poetic aspects associated with it. Sometimes there's a contrast between one side to the other, the right versus the wrong. There's contrasts that are observable, others that's reinforcing certain principles. You know, this idea, and it's always struck me, you read through some of these information here and about the refuge, where do you go for safety? Where are you going to find that safety and comfort? Well, he says it's in the fear of the Lord. That's where you're going to be able to go. That's the place, the fear of the Lord, is where there's strong confidence therein. The idea of fountain of life. You know, it's interesting in history and mythology, this idea of the fountain of youth and this idea of search for the fountain of youth. Going to take it in, have it. And so, you realize that people looked in all the wrong places for some of these types of things, what the scriptures teach. He said, you know, there's a fountain of life, and that having to do with that fountain of life and ongoing, you know, because the fountain of youth is what, well, I'm going to keep my youth and I'm going to continue to live ongoingly. I'm going to be able to take of it, right? That's the idea that behind it. And so there was actually searches in history back in certain time periods in which they were looking for and trying to find that fountain of youth. Well, you know what? We've got the fountain of life, where it has to do with the idea of not dying. You're not from a physical standpoint, but spirit, that you're going to live on continually, that eternal life, a blissful life. You know, isn't it interesting that people want things so badly and they don't know where to look to find what is truly genuine and real? When we go to the next point here, wise counsel tells men how to live godly. If you want to think about wise counsel, you're going to give counsel. You know, it's not uncommon, and we're all starting to do this thing, we want to give our opinions and our ideas and our thoughts. We're going to tell people what they need to do and how they need to do it, and we have all these insightfulnesses, and sometimes, and I'm not suggesting that it's not helpful or profitable. It may well be. Sometimes it may not, but we want to do this because we have this wealth of information, or maybe we have these understandings, and we want to share that. We're going to give you all of our advice. Well, let me kind of bring it to a point of appreciation of what true advice and help and counsel consist of. is telling people what the Lord expects, what the Lord requires. It's helping people understand what godly living involves. And people can give all kinds of ideas and things, but when you look back at it and you start looking at, well, is this really something that's going to help me be what I ought to be for the Lord? Wise counsel tells men how to live godly. You go back to the first chapter, and we noted the first chapter, obviously, when we were looking at these instructions given. It kind of gives the beginning point. It explains what's going on. Solomon's going to give all this information, and he talks about then at the outset of this, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And then in verse 8, my son, hear the instruction of your father. Do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck. Okay, he's giving instructions to his son. Now, what do you want to instruct your children regarding? What is, do you want to impart to them? Solomon's going to tell. I've got some things I want to share with you. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. He goes on to describe this, and we'll have the occasion to kind of talk about those matters somewhat, think about it additionally. But here's my son. Hey, I want you to understand something. Here are some matters you need to be aware of. I'm going to give you these instructions, and I want you to understand what godly living is all about, how to live godly. What more important thing can we tell somebody else? What more desirable instruction do we want to give to our own family members than how they are to serve the Lord rightly and to live before Him in a right manner? You go to the second chapter, and picking up the verse there of 5 and reading down through verse 9, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find knowledge of God. So here's the fear of the Lord. Again, it's another place that is found many times in Proverbs and other places in Scripture as well. But it goes on from there, for the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk uprightly. He guards the path of justice and preserves the way of the saints. It goes through and is descriptive of these matters, and then finishing the point, then in verse 9, you will understand righteousness and justice, equity, and every good path. You're going to understand this. Why? Because I'm going to instruct you in regard to it. I'm going to give them counsel. But you know, my opinion is worthless unless it's based upon what the Scriptures have to say. My insights don't help anyone unless it's going to guide them into right conduct and proper behavior. In the fourth chapter, in verses 1 through 4, hear my children the instruction of a father, and give attention to no understanding, for I give you good doctrine. Do not forsake my law. When I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, he also taught me and said to me, let your heart retain my words, keep my commands and live. He goes on to talk about get wisdom, get understanding. Get these insights that help you to recognize what you need to do in life. Here, you know, what I was taught, I want to teach you. What makes it, what I was taught important? Because it was from God. But they gave instructions that helped me understand what God requires and expects of me. That helped me understand what the fear of the Lord is all about. When you go then to the 16th chapter, in verse 6, again, just noting some of these pithy sayings, one, two, three verses, sometimes that contains a topic and an idea. The next verse after that is going to go into something else. The verses before that are dealing with other matters. But here you go through this, and there's this point that comes up and tries to help one recall what the underlying purpose of everything is. In mercy and truth, atonement is provided for iniquity, and by the fear of the Lord, one departs from evil. What's going to keep me from going to evil and doing wrongful things, not engaging in these things? Well, it's fear of the Lord. And my instructions to others is to help them understand what that consists of and what it means to involve myself in evil and wrongdoing and how I avoid that, because the Lord has given me those instructions. And He wants me to share that with others. Not my ideas per se, not my insights because I'm some kind of exceptionally competent person with understanding. The only thing that I have to offer is what the Word says, to apply it properly and correctly. In the 23rd proverb, in verse 17, do not let your heart envy sinners, be zealous for the fear of the Lord all the day. You know, I mentioned this sermon this morning that in our Bible study, going through things having to do with the relationship and Christian relationship to the world. One of the things that came up in the context of what was being said had to do with the idea of how we look about around us with those individuals and how we perceive them, and jealousy and envy, this idea of some things associated with them. Well, we're told not to be those that are evil or those that have in this world been successful in man's eyes. That's not the standard by which we want to look at. Don't envy sinners. If you're stopped, let me just kind of put it in the perspective of this. You know, there are people that have got a lot of notoriety. They're famous. They've accomplished a great deal in their life. They made great amounts of money and wealth. They've got a life that seems to be one that everybody would desire to have. And how do we look at that? How does others look at it? You know, the people of the world look at it and say, I wish I had that. Oh, I would just find that so great to have all this notoriety, to be thought of so highly, to be so successful in whatever field that I'm going about, and to make all this money. What a wonderful thing. And then Christians are those that are children of God. Of course, at this period of time, children of God, Christianity didn't take place to the New Testament. It applicable to us, though, to think about it as being Christians, children of God today. How do we then look at those individuals and go, look what they've got. Wouldn't I just love to have that? Well, you think about what it costs. And you think about what they've given up in order to have those things, or what their priorities in life. What is the most important thing to them? For the child of God is the fear of the Lord. It's to do His will. To follow His teaching. And as noted this morning in the class when talking about those things, they're not to be envied, they're to be pitied. Because they don't have what we have. They don't have the blessings we enjoy. People of the world envy them. Christians should never have that disposition toward individuals who are outside of Christ, living ungodly lives. It's a sad state of affairs and condition. And let me tell you something. When you start reading about these individuals in the newspapers and they come on the TV about certain things and you see how unhappy, despondent they are when you say, why are they unhappy? Why are they despondent? They have everything. And that's the problem. They don't. And they realize there's something lacking in their life. And in many instances, they take their lives. They squander what they have. They're seeking after things. They get into drugs, addictions of all varieties and types because the most important thing is missing out of their lives. That which is the life, genuine, true meaning. Brethren, why would we envy that when we have that, when we're living as we should? Wise counsel tells men how to live godly. Be wise when choosing companions. So I want to end with this point, this idea of wisdom. One of the recurring themes, once again, even as it's talking about all different kinds of topics and subjects, and it's fascinating to read about it. In fact, there's a goodly amount of humor. I thought a little bit about maybe even discussing some of that aspect in the lesson this evening and chose not to, but it is interesting. You go through and there's some referencing about being lazy that it strikes one, the picture that it forms, and the humor associated with so lazy won't even draw the hand up to the mouth. And it describes it in such a way that it kind of is ironic in the way it's descriptive of those things, but there's the humor associated with it. You don't want to be like that. But more importantly, as it relates to what we're trying to emphasize tonight, coming back to this general theme or idea of wisdom and being wise and what that constitutes and giving wise counsel, be wise when choosing companions. Now, let me just make this observation. I'm not just talking to young people. You know, what's the immediate thought we have? Oh, okay, the preachers talking about companions, these people you hang around with and everything. And the first immediate concept is, oh, well, these young people and how they're involved with these other people around about. And so that's what we're talking about. Well, it includes young people, obviously, and how they need to be trained and taught and understand. But it's not exclusively about those age groups that are younger. It involves every level of life and every age. Because think about who we're around and who we want to be around, who we want to associate with. That tells us a lot about who we are. When you know who you want to be with, then it tells us a lot about who we are. And it reveals a goodly amount as it relates to our character. And as it involves then this idea of fear of the Lord. Do we have that fear of the Lord? You go back to the first chapter of Proverbs once again. We've already noted verse 10, which there's instructions, sinners entice you, do not consent. It goes from there and says, if they say, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol and whole like those who go down the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast your lot among us. Let us have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. What's he? He's right. Now, that's pretty extreme, is it not? He's giving this advice, wise counsel, the idea of fearing the Lord. You're going to get with these individuals, and they're going to go out, and they're going to see opportunities, and they're going to go and say, come on with us. We can make ourselves rich. We can bring things and take it from others. And even the idea of killing someone to have what they possess, it's behind that. And go, that's pretty extreme. But it's the idea of that association, that interaction. It's the idea of who we hang with, what the people we're around, the influence that they exert upon us. Sometimes we think we're going to exert influence upon them, and we always need to be influencing others toward right. But you know something that's interesting? When you get around with certain types of people and situations, and they're doing certain activities, you're not influencing them toward doing what's right. You're just engaging along with them in things that ought not to be done. When you go to the fourth chapter, and there, verses 14 and 15, for her proceeds are better than the profits of silver, and her gain than fine gold. He's talking about happy is the man with wisdom. It's describing these types of things there in regard to it in verse 3. Chapter 3, rather, and it's talking about the happy is the one who has wisdom back there and the need to obtain it. I got in the third chapter. Over in the fourth chapter, it's where I wanted to look at is verse 14. Do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not walk in the way of the evil. Avoid it and do not travel on it. Turn away from it and pass on. It's the idea of traveling along, your traveling companions. It doesn't mean that you're actually traveling down the road or going south. It's the ones you're associating with and you're in with them and engaged in activities with them. And so there's a warning about here, these ones, do not enter the path of the wicked. Don't travel that direction. Don't walk with them. Avoid it. Turn from it. Get away from it. In the 13th chapter, in verse 20, he who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. Now, see, here's the thing. We often think about, and I'm not minimizing this by any means, because that's kind of emphasized at the outset here, who we're hanging with, and some of these people that are evil, they're engaged in wicked things, and we're going to associate with them, we're going to be around them, and that's going to rub off on us, as we say, and things. But it's not just who we are to avoid, it's who we are to associate with. Have you thought about it that way? There's a lot of this wisdom that's being imparted saying, you need to be with the right people. And just like you're with the wrong people and it rubs off and it's situations that get you in trouble, being with the right people helps you be what you ought to be. Being with the wise, being with those individuals who are godly, being with those individuals who want to, you know what, they help us do what's right. We're an encouragement to them. So, think in your mind, who do you want to be with and why? And then think about who you are with and why. Who do you associate with and who you're involved with and what are you trying to achieve as a consequence of that? What is it that you're after? So here's the instructions that have to do with these things when it says about these matters, about he who walks with wise men will be wise. Yeah, you're wise to walk with them and you gain more wisdom, more understanding, benefited more greatly. Of course, the opposite also takes place here. You go to the 27th chapter of Psalms, or Proverbs, excuse me. And then notice with me down in verse 9, and then we're also going to look at verse 17. Ointment and perfume delight the heart. The sweetness of a man's friend gives delight by hearty counsel. Here's that heart of counsel, the friend, the situation, those that you have these friends and things in common. These things benefit us, build us up. It's described as something that refreshes and helps and brightens. That's the terminology that's used there, the sweetness of friend. The delight in that godly counsel, because you're with people that have that same mentality and the same desires. When you look at verse 17, as iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. Here again, here's individuals and the friend, and these individuals, of course, the underlying point of this, the nature of that friendship, the nature of that friend, the kind of friend it is one that helps you, it sharpens you, it makes you stronger. That being with wise people makes you wiser. It's wise to be with wise people, those that have a fear of the Lord. That's the beginning of knowledge. That's the beginning then of wisdom. That's the beginning of everything that has to do with what we ought to be. Godly people are going to pursue what's right and give counsel to tell people how to do it. And that's what the book of Proverbs contains, what it expresses. And then you think about 1 Corinthians 15:33, which is a passage where typically familiar with, it comes up, and rightly so in such a study. Because it's not just over here in the Old Testament, but the same principles are applicable throughout. The same teachings, you know, it's not different back then as it is today, and some people say things have changed. Well, let me tell you what hasn't changed. That's human nature and the conduct of people and their attitudes and dispositions of heart. That's been the same throughout. So the warnings of Proverbs are just as applicable today. The instructions that we give can aid us and assist us today just as much as it was at the time it was given by Solomon. So what do we find over in 1 Corinthians 15 as the inspired writer, Paul, addressed this same topic and issue? Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. Who you're with is going to influence you and have an impact upon you. Let me tell you something, just as a final point along this line. With people that help us be what we ought to be, I think it seems self-evident, but we have to be reminded of that. We have to understand the wisdom to see the end from the beginning. At the very beginning, I'm going to hang with these people. And when I hang with these people, I'm going to help them do what's right. They're not doing what's right. I'm going to guide them in the right direction. Let me tell you something. You get into that thing. You know what wisdom tells? You're going to hang with these individuals. They're going to be doing this. You're the one that's going to be influenced to go the wrong way. Evil company corrupts good habits. You know how I know that's true? Well, I can look around me and see some of that, can't you? Can't you start to reflect on it? Can't you see it in your own life? You know, there are times and things when I've been people in a situation, circumstances, say, you know, this is not good. It's not helping me be what I should be. Other times being, you know, I'm with brethren and they're helping me and assisting me. We can see that. But you know why I know 100% that this is correct and true? Because it's the mind of God revealed to us. He told us this is the case. He created us and He knows us better than we know ourselves. And you can never go wrong doing what the Lord says to do. And that's the wisdom of Proverbs. That's the wisdom of God's holy and divine word. The fear of the Lord is doing His will. Wisdom is founded upon that. The instructions that we have tell us how we ought to live rightly to make heaven our eternal abode. We're about to sing a song of encouragement. If you're wise, all of us fall in this. We're wise when we do what the Lord tells us to do. And we're foolish when we do not. If you're subject to the Lord's call in any way, won't you please come as together we stand and sing.